Hi, everyone. Welcome to Ending the Drug War in Maine as part of Justice Radio. This is Charlotte Warren, as you all know, former lawmaker, social worker, and Pied Piper to try and end the drug war in Maine. This is very exciting for me, a very exciting episode for me, because I am here with an amazing lawmaker, Representative Lydia Crafts. Representative Lydia Crafts is the sponsor of LD 1975. I'm going to get the name wrong, but I'm going to say what the important part is. This bill is all about Maine taking a public health response to substance use disorder. Lydia, I wondered if at first you could just tell us, what does your bill do? What does it propose?
Yeah, well, Char, thank you first for giving me the opportunity to talk about it, because it is by spreading the message and getting the word out that this really important work is happening. And it's not being done alone, that there's a coalition of folks across the state who care about this issue deeply. So thank you for giving me the opportunity. I mean, your synopsis, and just by the way, too, I could not tell you the official name of the bill. The idea is to really shift the narrative of how we talk about substance use disorder. And for decades, we have been criminalizing the behaviors surrounding a diagnosis, right? A struggle that all too many Mainers face, whether themselves or in their families. And this bill is really about trying to change how we're solving the problem. Mm-hmm. What we're doing isn't working. Across departments, across state government, people are in agreement. What we're doing is not working, and we have to change it. LD 1975 is an attempt, a dramatic one with huge goals to change people's lives at changing the course of how we talk about and how we serve people who are struggling with a mental health condition. So the goal is primarily to look at how we provide support and services to people and families and communities who are struggling. And that is both, you know, from a behavioral health and a substance use angle, that the two are really integrated. And so we had the goal of creating a statewide system of crisis receiving centers, basically 24-hour access to care that is not about law enforcement. It's not about criminalizing behaviors. It's about getting people their needs met. And that, we know, does not happen on a 9-to-5 schedule. It doesn't happen in one place in the state. It is across every county that people are struggling and are in crisis. And for us to be able to help them to change their life path, to find health and meaning and purpose, we have to meet them where they're at when they're asking for help. And we know that it's a messy path folks follow. There is not a formula in which we can say, right, intervene at this point and everything goes according to some plan. And state government loves plans and loves mm-hmm. formulas. And so we're saying, hey, the role of the state is really, we're asking you to change. We're asking you to get behind supporting folks and get them what they need, whether that's a mental health evaluation, access to detox, right? Give them a place where they can have their basic needs met and connected to the services that they need for whatever their path to recovery looks like. And so for them to lead healthy and productive lives, we know there has to be a place other than the criminal justice system, other than law enforcement. You know, I say that, and it's important to understand that receiving centers are also partners, that right. when if law enforcement were called or EMTs were involved in a situation, right, we want to make sure everyone feels like we're working together, rowing in the same direction. Here's a place for folks to come to be safe and get their basic needs met. So that's the goal, is to have that available in every county in the state. And we really believe, I believe personally, that in order for us to help people access that, we need to decriminalize the possession of substances. And that's really the other half of this bill, that when we are talking about individual small amounts of drugs and scheduled substances, that's a symptom of a disease, right? That is, that's something that we know people who struggle with SUD are likely to be in possession. And if we can remove that from the criminal code, I strongly believe that we can help people gain access to and reduce stigma to asking for help and getting the help that they need that does not belong behind bars.
Right.
That help and a roof over your head and food and medication assisted treatment, all of that can be met without putting people behind bars, because we know that that just disrupts the path to recovery. It increases the risk of fatal overdose upon reentry into the community. And frankly, it costs our state an enormous amount of money. And for those who are considering right fiscal responsibility and what it means to spend state dollars, we could be spending state dollars in a much smarter and more efficient way to get people health care. And that's the goal. That's what I'm trying to do.
I love it. It's such a beautiful explanation of the bill. And I just want to say, this is one of the things that I think you and I have personally talked about. We're both social workers, right? And if we were coming to state government and saying, hey, we've got this great plan and we want to ask you for millions of dollars for it. And lawmakers would say to us, show us what your return rate is. Show us your successes. How are you meeting your goals, right? If we look at the current system of what's happening, of how we're dealing with people that are struggling with substance use disorder, right? If that was our plan, we would not get funded, would we? Because the success rate is in the opposite direction, is negative. We're losing more people, and you can still, in this state, find any drug you want at any location at any point in time, right? So what you're offering is actually something that is data supported, that is evidence-based, right? This idea of the receiving centers or the crisis receiving centers. Would you tell our listeners a little more about what that's based on?
Yeah. Well, the Living Room model based in Cumberland County in Portland is the state's first, I think they call it a 23-hour care center, which is really the model for what we're talking about. Governor Mills recently announced an additional crisis center coming to Lewiston. There are plans in Augusta and Kennebec County. So this model is not a new idea. It's not something that I came up with, right? It is something that is proven, and the Living Room model specifically is an evidence-based model that looks at how do we welcome people into our quote unquote living room, right? Make them safe and comfortable and ready to access their basic needs. How do we find them housing? How do we make sure that they have food and healthcare? How do we make sure that they have case management services to work within the very complex behavioral health system that we have here? So what is the entry point in which people are more likely to find greater health and happiness? And we know, right, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If you are not clothed and housed and warm and fed, it's going to be really hard to talk about your long-term recovery.
Exactly.
It's going to be so difficult to make that jump. And what we're asking when we incarcerate people is to say, make that jump, make that leap unsupported on your own. And then when you're out of prison, you're going to be more alone and face the same threats to your recovery as you faced before you came in here. And so it is really some of those foundational, like, who are your supports? How are you navigating your life? And what can we help improve so that you are safer and secure and ready to, right, take that next step, whatever that step is for you? And that's a key part of this, is that it's individualized. This is not a cookie cutter approach. We are here for you 23 hours a day to make sure that we can help you when you are asking for help, right? Coercive treatment doesn't work. We need to make sure that we are offering you a whole spectrum of supports so that when you or your family member or your best friend is in at that point and ready for help, that we're there and we have those services available to you.
Mm, so good. Do you feel like people's sort of positions on drug use and drug possession and criminalizing drug use, is it starting to shift? Are you feeling some hope for this bill, or where are you at?
Yeah. Well, as long as I'm working on this, you know, feeling hope and optimism is crucial for me. And so, you know, I show up for work every day feeling really committed and excited because what is true at this point in 2024 is you cannot find someone who hasn't been affected by substance use disorder, whether that is in its legal and socially acceptable form in alcohol or adult use, you know, recreational cannabis, whatever it is, folks are struggling. And those numbers, right, 607 Mainers lost in 2023, those are significant numbers. And so I participate, right? I bring this legislation forward. I serve on the Maine Recovery Council because it's an issue that I know matters both to me personally, but to my community. Mm. And folks aren't all on the same page about how we get to that next point. And that is true for any policy shift, right? Decriminalizing possession scares people. Mm-hmm. People are meeting this legislation from a place of fear. And I understand that. Because one of the messages I hear from family members is, I would rather have my loved one, my daughter, my son, in prison and alive than dead. And when we face our communities who are suffering the loss of their children, that fear and that anger is real and it's palpable. And if we allow that fear and that grief to drive us to stronger punitive measures, the same trajectory we've been on, I can already tell you where we're going. It's down, right? Mm-hmm. We are not saving more lives by making harsher penalties on possession. And there's a lot of information out there to feed the fear that folks are facing. What I think is really important is to look at the evidence we have, the demonstration of effective public policy and what it looks like to take a public health approach to saving lives and walk side by side with those folks living in fear. It's okay that they're not here yet. It does not weaken my resolve to fight for good policy and to save, right? If we could make a change today that would save some of those 607 lives lost last year, it would be worth it. And it's a struggle, but there's bipartisan support. It is not relegated to one part of our state. This affects all of us. And inaction is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And so this is my attempt at a future that can demonstrate to my own children that we care about our communities. We care about making sure that people can lead safe and healthy lives here in Maine. And to me, what that looks like is a public health approach. And that's what 1975 is attempting to do.
Right. Great. So thank you for listening. This is Justice Radio, and this is Ending the Drug War in Maine. I'm Charlotte Warren. I'm here with the amazing representative, Lydia Crafts, who has the bill LD 1975, which is a public health response to substance use disorder. I want to ask you one last question. You just referenced that there are family members who have expressed to both of us, and we were on a call one night where a mom really expressed that the only time she was able to relax was when she knew her child was incarcerated because she knew her child was going to make it through the night. And for me, right, that is just such a sad state of how we are caring for our people. Because I know how terrible jails are for anybody's mental health, full stop, not negotiable, right? The coldness, the slamming steel, the small cells, the stigma, the shame, and yet I understand the comfort of a mom to lay her head on a pillow and know that at least tonight she's not going to wake up with that call. How do we straddle those two realities? Right. And the way that I heard you talk to that mom, you know, I just was like, hey, go social workers, go Lydia. You just provided her with such comfort. And this is a real question we have to talk about. So can you share a little of your thinking about that for all of the family members that are struggling this path along with their loved ones?
Yeah, I think in that moment where a parent or a loved one feels that sense of relief, it's really temporary. And we know that, right, the day comes where someone is leaving incarceration. And when you hear that they are 12.7 times more likely to die of an overdose, that relief is very temporary. And so that's one piece of it. But the other one is, as a parent, as a family member, as a friend, when the only place we can tell someone they are fed and bathed and have a roof over their head is prison, then our society is failing. We are missing a critical link that we can do all of that without a prison cell.
Right.
We can.
And we could save money if we did it.
Right. I mean, it is a very reasonable idea that we could provide health care and meet someone's basic needs without incarceration. And just because the only way we've done it is through incarceration doesn't mean it will always be that way. And whether 1975, you know, does it all this year, I predict that in the next 10 years, we will look back on our system of addressing addiction and substance use and feel a lot of remorse for the ways in which we have failed our communities. And it's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take some time. But at the end of the day, if we think about human beings getting their basic needs met and their basic health care without incarcerating them, it is a logical proposal to say we could give you those services at a smaller cost, more localized in your community, and you could then also seek employment and raise your family and be a productive member of your community without all of the repercussions of what incarceration and involvement in the criminal justice system lead to and all of the disruption.
Right.
So the continuity of here's a place, here's a way to help your loved one get their needs met that doesn't have to include a prison cell. To me, that's a story that loved ones want to tell. They want to tell a story of how their child was saved, how they were able to get them to a place that could provide them the love and support they needed when they needed it, and that path doesn't have to include prison.
Exactly. Exactly. Said so well. Thank you.
Thank you
so much for coming on. I just really appreciate it. And we'll all be working together on this bill. So we'll let our listeners know. Look up LD 1975. Go to maine.gov. Click on legislature. Look up LD 1975. The sponsor is the amazing Representative Lydia Crafts. Send in a letter, an email to the lawmakers on the HHS committee. Thank you. Thank you. This is Charlotte Warren with Ending the Drug War in Maine on part of Justice Radio. And I am here with Representative Nina Milliken from Blue Hill. And Nina Milliken is a member of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee and also a co-sponsor of the bill that we've been talking about today, LD 1975, which is a public health response to substance use disorder. And so may I call you Nina?
Yes.
Okay. Nina, thank you.
You're welcome.
And will you share, why are you supporting this bill? Why do you see this as the right approach?
All right, thank you. So the reason I supported the bill for a number of reasons, but I guess the primary reason that I supported the bill is because I myself am a person in long-term recovery at this point from a variety of substance use disorders, including alcohol, nicotine, and narcotics, and probably the hardest addiction I've ever overcome. Okay, maybe it was nicotine, but heroin and opiates were my preferred substance for several years. I also spend a lot of time, like you said, I'm on the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee here in the Maine Legislature, and I have spent a good amount of time in the last few months in Maine State Prison and in all of the Department of Corrections facilities across the state, except for Machias Port. So I have seen firsthand how criminalizing substance use disorder causes so much more harm to people's lives than treating substance use disorder. And I think so often, particularly in our committee, we justify criminalizing it and locking people up for it because we can send them there to get treatment. And there is no treatment offered in Maine State Prison that is the preferred mechanism to get people treated. Mm-hmm. Because removing people from their families, removing people from their lives, is deeply traumatic for the people who suffer that type of offense. And I think it is offensive. And I think there are certain situations in which we could make the argument that for the safety of the public, we should be putting people in an incarcerated setting. But simply using drugs is not a danger to our communities. It might be a danger to ourselves personally, but there are many other better ways to treat people who have that issue.
I love that you've been touring all of the facilities. So we're talking to an expert here. We're talking to somebody who is a policy expert on this issue. And what you're seeing is, first of all, such a huge proportion of the folks that we're locking up, both in our county jails and in our state facilities, right, are filled with people that are struggling with the disease. And think of how hugely expensive it is that instead of just giving people the services that they need, in their communities.
That doesn't even take into consideration that incarceration is a really cyclical and generational issue. So people who are experiencing substance use disorder end up getting charged with a criminal offense, going to jail, and they leave behind children.
Right.
And those children often then are growing up in poverty because poverty is cyclical also. So, and then when you would take away, particularly, we know that there's a difference in how we pay men and how we pay women. So if you take out the primary breadwinner of a family, you're keeping those kids in poverty and generational trauma. They're going to be impacted by that trauma of losing a parent, and they are likely also then to end up having a substance use disorder. A friend of mine said it's like we're trying to treat ourselves with the wrong medicine and a lot of it. And I thought that was a really great and impactful way to talk about substance use disorder, because I don't know anybody who has a substance use disorder that isn't treating their trauma and their frustrations with the wrong medicine and too much of it.
Mm-hmm. And we as a society are treating the issue of substance use disorder with the wrong medicine, the most expensive medicine and the least effective medicine.
Absolutely.
Right? And we have 50 years of proof.
Absolutely.
50 years of proof. And now we've created these sort of little mini recovery centers inside the prison, inside the jails, costing us millions of dollars and not getting good benefit. What are the parts of this bill, when you've been having conversations with other lawmakers, what are the parts of this bill that people really seem to get or cling on to?
It seems to me like overwhelmingly legislators support and understand that we need better access to treatment in our communities, right? That seems like, I mean, the cost of it aside, because I think a lot of people would argue that we don't need to be spending that much money on it. But overwhelmingly, I think most legislators agree that we need to be providing treatment for people who want to seek out treatment in this state. I think the part that people are having a really hard time with is the decriminalization piece, which I know has been changed recently. And I think there's a lot of logical reasons for that. I think that if we look at other examples of where decriminalization has happened, it's been a messy process. But I would challenge us to say that the criminalization, the initiation of the drug war, the war on drugs by the Nixon administration probably was an extraordinarily messy process for the communities it was meant to impact, right? So the anti-war left and Black communities in this state, in this country. And so the implementation of that war didn't just like cause disruption in those communities. It devastated those communities. And it was very intentional. And it was very well laid. I mean, like the architects of the war on drugs spelled that out very clearly in statements. We were very intentional. We wanted to lock up the anti-war left and the Black leaders of this country. So yes, it's messy to roll that back. But it was messy to start. And we owe it to all of our communities who are suffering with this disorder. And it's not limited to the anti-war left or Black communities at this point. And I think that's why we've been so successful in bringing this up recently, is that it's impacting white communities at a significantly high rate. We need to dig in and be messy a little bit as we like work to mend the harm that has been caused by the war on drugs.
Mm-hmm. And that continues to harm our communities, right? And if we think about just how dangerous the drug supply is right now,
absolutely,
right? All because of this criminalization. I love, 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 love that you said it was messy to put it into effect. And it's going to be messy to get out of it,
yes,
right? And absolutely, all of the data shows us that what we're doing isn't working, right? Lydia and I talked about earlier how we have 50 years of this process, of this policy, and you can still, in the state of Maine, at any time of day, on any street corner, get any drug you want.
Absolutely.
It has failed.
Absolutely, it's failed. And I would argue, too, that like we have legalized alcohol, right, since the end of Prohibition in 1933. Alcohol has been legal, and it has become much more difficult for people who are not legally allowed to possess it to get it because it's well regulated.
Right.
Right. So if the intention of keeping drugs illegal is to keep them out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them, when I was a teenager, it was much easier for me to get drugs, cannabis specifically, than alcohol, because there was no...
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so that doesn't work.
Dealer everywhere.
Dealers everywhere. And also, what like you said, the drug supply we have now is so toxic. It's poison. It's poisonous. And it's killing people. I feel very fortunate that when I was using heroin, it was heroin, mm-hmm, right? Thank God. Mm-hmm. Because if I was still using narcotics now, I definitely would not probably be alive today. And we owe it to the people in our communities who are suffering with this disorder to like allow them the tools they need to stay safe until they're ready to find recovery. And we owe it to them to make sure that treatment is available when they're ready to access treatment. And we don't have that.
We don't have that. Exactly. Thank you so much for taking the time. And I just want to say, I'm so glad you're here. You hear me say this to you all the time. I am so thankful you are serving on that committee. You know, sometimes I'm watching that committee work from my basement, which is where my office is. And when you are talking, I am just standing up. I am cheering. You're preaching the good word and you're doing the good work. And so I just thank you so much for that. So again, for the listeners, the bill is LD 1975. You've heard from a couple of the cool cats who are working on this really important policy. Do us a favor. Send your legislators a note saying that you support a public health response to substance use disorder, and you support LD 1975. And again, you've been listening to Ending the Drug War in Maine. I'm Charlotte Warren, and you are listening on Justice Radio. I want to thank again Representative Milliken for sticking around today, even after her committee was done, and talking with us. So thank you so much.
Thank you.